Kultur um Fënnef.
Und da kommen wir hier bei den Filmen. Weil für seinen Twitter-Film hat der Kamera delt sich der Viggo Mortensen der Fisch mit der Vicky Krieps. Silvester, The Dead Don't Die erzählt die tragische Liebesgeschichte zwischen zwei Immigranten im Zeit vom amerikanischen Bürgerkrieg. Während dem letzten Lux Filmfest am März hatte Michel Döller erstand gelehnt, mit dem dänisch-amerikanischen Cineast und Akteur Viggo Mortensen zu schwätzen. Wir lauschen bis ran.
Viggo Mortensen, hi.
Hi.
For your second feature film, you chose the Western, which is an archetypical American genre. Is this, for someone who makes films in the U.S., some kind of medieval rite of passage?
I'm not sure. Maybe some people see it that way. I didn't think of it that way. I mean, I'm old enough that when I was a little boy, you could still see quite a few Westerns in the beginning of the 1960s. You could see in the middle of the 60s, you could still see Westerns in the cinema, and a lot on TV. Lots of TV series had Westerns, I remember. We had black and white TV, and I would watch these shows, and I liked them. And I also, because as a little boy, I rode horses very young, and so I was attracted to them for that reason also. It's not the same now. I mean, things are available if you want to watch them. Media is different now, of course. On television, you can find anything almost. But children don't go to the cinema normally and see Westerns the way I did as a boy. So I was interested. But when I wrote this, started to write this story that ended up being called The Dead Don't Hurt or Jusqu'au Bout du Monde in French, I guess it's going to be. I didn't know it was a Western at first. I was just had an image of a little girl running through the forest, maples, oaks, and thinking about my mother when she was that age and that kind of landscape. And then I advanced with the story and I started to think, okay, about effect before cause. And so I was looking, okay, what happens to this girl at the end of her life? And so I started there, and I started putting the pieces together as I wrote. I had time, because I was writing in 2020 during the lockdown, so I wrote a lot, undistracted, and I enjoyed putting it together, this story. And I realized partway through, okay, she's going west, it's 1860s, so it's a Western. So that's how it happened. But I enjoyed it, and because I liked them, even though I'm aware that most of the Western genre is made up of movies that are somewhat simple, naive. You know, the whole thing started at the beginning of the 20th century. Sort of mythological folklore stories, maybe vindicating this idea of the frontier and of manifest destiny and all these things about American history. So they were somewhat clumsy, a lot of them. And thousands were made, literally 7,000-8,000 movies until maybe 1962 when it really was not so popular anymore. Most of them are bad, but that's true of any genre movies. Most, you know, 80-90% of movies that are made in every genre every year are bad. They're not good original stories, it's just the way it is. And in Westerns, because there were so many more, it was really a staple in the U.S., especially in rural cinemas, and people went to see what they knew, what they imagined, recent history for their families and their grandfathers. And they liked to see the details and horses, and there were stock situations, and you could see them repeated again and again, you know, whether it was bank robberies, outlaws, sheriffs, fighting with indigenous people, the railroad, you know, all these stock plots, you know. So mostly not so interesting, but for me, even in the bad ones that are naive and poorly made, there's usually something that you can learn from, and especially when you start thinking, okay, I'm going to make a Western, how do I want it to be? And my idea was simply not to reinvent anything in terms of the way it looks. I was careful. I wanted to make it feel, look accurate historically and be in the tradition of the very best of classic Westerns. That was my idea. So I didn't want to draw attention to the camera movements or Some of them are complex, but I didn't want it to seem that way. You know, some of these single sequence shots. But I wanted it to be smooth. I wanted to see the people. I wanted to see the places, the landscapes, the objects that they had, the ride, the horses, the way they were ridden. So everything, we were very careful with the details. The one thing, obviously, that's different than most classic Westerns is that there's a woman at the center. And especially that when her male companion goes off to war, we don't see any of that. We stay with her. Literally, when he rides away, he rides out of shot, and we stay with her, and we don't see him for a long time.
Well, that's the big difference with, let's say, old-school classical Westerns, where women didn't have a big part.
The prostitute with a heart of gold, or the woman who is victimized, the women that men fight over, but they're secondary characters usually. Of course, there have been some revisionist Westerns, not very good ones, in the last 20 years, 30 years, where so every once in a while there's a group of women who take revenge on men, and or it's almost like a superhero movie where a woman, you know, gets a gun and
Calamity Jane or nothing.
Yeah, exactly. But I wanted to make Vivienne to be a flesh and blood, real woman of her time, with the limitations of the period, but also someone who was very independent and strong-willed and, you know, brave.
Well, Vicky Krieps, who plays the character Vivienne, you depict her as a kind of Jeanne d'Arc, Joan of Arc, so a medieval character. But that's very original if you compare to other Westerns. That's not something you're used to see. So very surprising imagery with this vision of a knight with his iron armor, etc.
Yeah, but if you think about it a little bit, the myth, the mythology of cowboys, you know, and you see this even, you know, in the later stages of the Western, even in the 60s, and the Clint Eastwood characters, but lots of Westerns from the beginning. In a way, cowboys, their heritage is the chevalier, the knights. I mean, they are a kind of knight, so it's not so strange if you think about it. And for Vivienne to be, as a young girl, fascinated with the story of Jeanne d'Arc, especially she's an only child, she lives in nature, she has fantasy life, makes sense. And it allowed us to show her as a child, already very strong-willed and knowing what she wants and asking complicated questions of her mother, for example. Why do men fight? Well, they have their reasons. She wants answers, you know. Do women fight? Well, not so much like that. Jeanne d'Arc fought, and she says, yeah, but she was a saint, you know. Well, I want to fight like her and my father. And she equates them. She says, why not? You know, so she's already, you can see her mentality. She's a strong, independent person, even as a child. So it made sense to me to put that together and to have this vision, in essence, of a medieval cowboy, really.
There's also this theme of medieval courtly love that runs through the whole film, because if you consider your character, Holger, which is this Danish immigrant who falls in love with that woman, the way he thinks he can prove his love to her is to enlist in the Confederate army. So
I understand what you're saying. I don't think that he enlists to prove his love to her. It's the opposite. He's just as stubborn as she is. And everybody, nobody's perfect. And, you know, maybe later on he feels it was an error to go, right? But he wants to go because he feels it's right. It's morally the right thing to do, almost like a knight, really. He has this ability, this experience, this training. He's previously been a soldier in European war. And so he feels like, I can be useful. I should do this thing, even though she's against it. But she also respects his, even though she doesn't like it, she respects his free will in the way that he also, he respects the way she wants to be, you know. It's interesting. Their relationship, even though they're quite different, she's a woman of her time, he's a man of his time period, but their relationship is one of trust. So he's willing to evolve a little bit, and she also evolves in her attitude toward him. She makes do. She has her life, and she may never see him again. And then one day he comes back. But it's not going to be like, oh, I'm so glad you're back. And it's like, well, you have to adapt to the situation. And if you don't, that's your problem. It's quite modern relationship in a way, even though they're very much from their time.
But still, there's this aspect of chivalry. As a knight, you had to prove your love by your heroic deeds. What she has to offer, she is also elevating him culturally. She takes him to an art exhibition.
That's true. That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah, there is. But, and he's willing to go, even though it seems obvious he doesn't know much about it and is not that interested. But because she is, he goes. But she's also playful. She does it for a reason, too, to put him in a situation and put another man in a situation that's uncomfortable, and she enjoys that.
The underlying message of the whole film seems to be a very pessimistic one, because he fails, of course. He has a choice. He's torn between two ideals, as we said, serving his country, his new country, and serving his beloved woman, and he makes the wrong choice. But in the end, isn't this also a way to crush the old American myth, start a new life, to have a fresh start? And clearly he's a man, he seems very tired, he seems very burdened by his past, and the possibility of starting from scratch isn't given to him.
Well, he goes there and he tries to do that. There's a mention of his past, and he doesn't say much about it, but he says just enough so she gets an idea when she asks him about his previous life. But he does make a new start with this little boy, in a way. You know, it's almost like he's keeping a promise there, which is also, I suppose, in a way, chivalrous, but it's also, as a human being, he makes the right choice there, and he starts to get used to the idea, and you can see there's going to be a future. To me, I think it ends on a hopeful note, a realistic note, but it's like, okay, I like movie stories where when it finishes, I've been interested, hopefully, as I've watched it. And then at the end, you ask yourself, now what? In other words, like life itself, it doesn't end, the movie. It's like, okay, there's a new horizon now, literally. And what does it mean? What will these two people that we see at the end, what will they do? But there's a willingness to try. And so this is kind of like, it is a sort of reinvention or a new chapter that's about to begin.
Well, this man with his boy on a horse riding through a wasteland echoes The Road, which was one of your iconic appearances on screen.
That's true. They also end up on the coast. That's true. I think it's a little more hopeful. I mean, it's difficult, you know, and we are an accumulation of all our hopes, regrets, everything that's happened in the past. And the older you get, the more accumulation you have of regrets, and you can either wallow in them and suffer from them, which will impede you from advancing in life and being open-minded and hopeful, I guess. Or you can learn from what you've done and try to do better. And his tendency, even though he's quite stubborn and his own person, Olsen is essentially an optimistic person, an open person, open to learning. He doesn't really have anything against anyone. He can be clumsy. He can make mistakes. Just like Vivienne can make her choices as well. And maybe you can say, well, that was a mistake, or maybe not. I mean, but they learn from what happens, and they... In the end, you either want to be with someone and make an effort, or you don't. And that's the choice for each person.
So, Viggo Mortensen, thank you very much.
Thank you for the in-depth discussion, and I hope people will fall in love with Vivienne, like everybody who was making the movie did. And maybe, even if you don't normally see Westerns, and I've heard this from some people that have seen it already, maybe you'll like this story enough that it'll make you curious, because there is a rich history of, you know, even though most of them, as I say, are simplistic and naive and not very well made as movies, there is a good amount throughout the history of the genre of Westerns that are well-written, well-made, and that are poetic, and that have elements of tragedy on a level with the best that human beings have written since the beginning of literature, really.
And the greatest directors, they all shot Westerns.
I suppose so, yeah. Even European ones, you know. Jacques Tourneur, André de Toth. There's been quite a few. Women, like, recently. Jane Campion from New Zealand. And so, yeah. And obviously, in the 60s, Sergio Leone and whole hundreds of Italian-made Westerns.
Now Viggo Mortensen.
Yeah. A Danish, Quebecois Western, I suppose.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
Und das war dann den Viggo Mortensen im Mikro vom Michel Delage, den Western, The Dead Don't Die, vom Amam. Viggo Mortensen und auch der Vicky Krieps lebt dann aktuell an den Kinoen. Und als ich vom großen Kino hat, der Film dann auch in der letzten Episode, den Samstag, beschwert. Und das könnt ihr natürlich nur lauschen bei uns an der Mediathek auf 100,7.lu.